definitely.
Hey, everybody, welcome to episode, Matt, what episode number is this? I forgot. Seven? Six?
Seven, I think.
Seven.
Lucky seven.
Number seven.
Lucky seven. And welcome to Jeff Rothpan and Matt McNeil.
Hey.
Guys, so this is episode seven, and we're going to be talking to Russell Peters. So, it's really interesting to me. I did this interview with him, and I've been fascinated with some of these people that I've interviewed because their careers are huge, and they have a huge presence in the comedy world, but it's not, I talked about this with Russell, it's not like it used to be where you could be, when you're incredibly famous in whatever part of show business, everybody knows who you are. But
right.
This is not the case with some of the guys I've interviewed. They're famous in their own giant groups.
Yeah.
I think maybe it's like, you know, back in the day, there were like five guys because there were only three channels. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it started, as I pointed out with Russell, it started out with, you know, the networks. It was three radio networks, which turned into television. And if you became a star on radio back in the 30s and 40s, you were known not just in the, you know, it was a little more difficult throughout the world. Now it's easier to get famous throughout the world, but everybody, you know, when it was three television networks, everybody talked about the same thing the next morning at the water cooler.
Yeah. Yeah, we all watched the same thing pretty much back then. So if somebody
had no choice,
night show, like a comedian went on the Tonight Show and became a star after one appearance, it's because millions and millions saw that one shot. And then, but now it's so splintered with so many channels and you know, networks and Netflix and everything else. You just get your own audience, I guess, but you're not a household name like you used to be.
Right. But now it's on the world scale because you can become internationally famous and still a good portion of the country has no idea who you are. That's why, you know, I always take my fame with a grain of salt because, you know, people around me, oh, everybody knows who you are. I go, no, they don't. The fans know who I am, but there's a bunch of people who go, who? You know,
we'll figure. I mean, you know, I got that problem.
Rothman can't even go to the mall.
So funny. Yeah. I don't know what's so funny, guys.
No, his own family. Anyway. In his own family, they go, who?
Right, right. But now I knew Russell, by the way. I knew Russell back in Canada, where I'm from. By the way, I'm American now.
Congratulations.
Oh, that's right.
It's great.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that was a big deal. It was like a year ago, though, wasn't it? Or 2 years, a year and a half?
That I became a citizen?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. It was like, now it's been, you know, because of the pandemic, I'm all screwed up with my time, but I think it's been 2 years.
Right.
So, yeah. But
what are you about to say? Sorry. But I want to qualify what I said by saying that Russell is, I mean, known the world over in countries that a lot of us have never been to, much less performed in, and he sells out stadiums all over the world.
Oh, man. huge. And when I knew him in Canada, what I was going to say was that we used to just play comedy clubs together, and you know, he was really funny, so I just thought, wow, he's going to be a great club comic. And it wasn't like so many years later all of a sudden I see him playing these huge, like just huge places that you were playing around the world, and I couldn't figure out what happened, but I guess we find out in the interview.
Well, sure, and it's kind of simple math. It's the same thing. You know, one video caught on, one of his comedy specials caught on, and a couple of clips went viral, and boom, there he went.
Man, that's great. All right, well, I enjoyed working with him way back then.
Yeah, have either of you guys ever seen him in a large venue live?
Oh, not in person, but I did see his specials, like where he was in like a big, I think it was like in England at the O2 Arena or something.
And, sure. Yeah.
And he was just talking like he was back in the clubs.
Yeah. And he's set all kinds of world records. And it's really fun. And he's a funny guy. And for those who aren't familiar, Indian, but grew up in Canada. So he's of Indian descent. And, you know, and he can make fun of stuff. He has license and he just goes after it, and it's great.
And he still goes after it, which is also, I think, really interesting. sure. point of view for him.
And you'll hear in the interview that he's a real proponent for sticking with who you are and doing what you do, because otherwise, if you don't, if you, you know, bow down to all this pressure, then your core audience is going to go away, because what you do is why they're there. And if you start not doing that, then they will go away because you're not making them, you're not on that edge anymore.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting over the last few weeks with the podcast that you've done. It seems among comedians there is this sort of like the same sentiment that you're just saying is like, you know, everybody feels a little bit boxed in, but at the same time you still got to do your thing.
Yeah, and I pointed that out with Adam Carolla. That what do you mean being canceled? He won't be canceled because he has his own show and his own network. He can say whatever he wants and do whatever he wants. And it's kind of the same thing on the road. Again, as Russell points out, it's like, so what if you're offending those people? They're not going to come to your show anyway. Who cares?
That's true. Right. Just do what you do.
Do what you do. And you're appealing to a giant piece of the population and they love it. And of course there's a line. There are lines that you don't want to go over, certain subjects you don't want to talk about, certain things you don't want to say. But the difference is that line for the woke crowd is certainly not the same place where the line is for your audience.
Or a stand-up comedian, because it's your job to really test those boundaries and figure out where you can go with it. Otherwise, you know, where's the funny?
Sure.
Right. Everybody's the same after that. If we all stick to the same, same rules.
Yeah, and I don't want to bring myself up again, but you know, when I came out with Ahmed the Dead Terrorist, people thought I was absolutely mentally ill. And
I remember that.
And now he has his own T-shirt.
Oh, nice, nicely done.
Yeah, I remember those days. I remember when I would open for you that somebody came up to me and said, you know, when you had Ahmed, one of the first times you had ever had Ahmed on stage, and they said to me, they said, "What is he doing?
What is he doing?"
Well, there's a very well-known club owner that we all know who asked me. He said, "We're getting so many complaints," and it was in a very non-conservative part of the country, and you know, a little bit left. And he said he claimed, and we all know this person. Maybe he exaggerated a bit. Said we're getting a bunch of complaints. You got to stop doing Ahmed. And this was between shows on like a Friday night. And I said, all right, I understand. All right. And I went back to backstage, and I'm sitting there by myself, and I'm going, no, I am not going to stop doing Ahmed, because I have been using him all over the country and people love this. And I'm not, you know, it's like, I'm not saying horrible. I'm not talking about anybody's religion. I'm talking about terrorists, for God's sakes. Yeah. So I said, screw it. And I walked on stage and that next show and did it anyway.
Cut to the international version of that, which was in the All Over the Map special, where Ahmed was banned in Malaysia.
Right.
When I say this, he literally was banned in Malaysia.
Yeah.
I don't mean to put that in air quotes, but he was banned in Malaysia, and you said, this is what people came to see. Let's do this.
Yeah, because people who represent me kept saying, you can't use Ahmed in Malaysia. And I'm like, what? That's why they bought the tickets. That's why they're there. True. So, Malaysia, you could be arrested on stage, taken away, caned. There was the guy that was caned, wasn't it, there in Malaysia? Caned from painting for tagging.
The Philippines. Gum out.
Yeah. So, So I thought, all right, I'm going to do this, but I'm going to try and get away with something so I have a good chance of not being arrested and hauled away.
Yeah.
And so, folks who know the story, I changed him. And I couldn't even say the name Ahmed on stage. Couldn't even say the name.
But you did. Do you remember?
I accidentally did.
I know. The look on your face in that video.
Because I didn't know what I'd said. Because we changed
the
him.
The audience went, ooh.
But hold on a second. You're getting to the end of the story first.
I was in there going, ooh.
Yeah, because what I did was I changed Ahmed the Dead Terrorist to his French cousin, Jacques Maire. Oh,
Jacques Maire.
And which means Jack shit in French.
Great,
but he was Jacques Maire, the French terrorist. And he came out, I put a chapeau on his head, a little beret, and I put a mustache on him, and he had a French accent. And we did the entire act exactly the same way, but he did it with a French accent. It was the French terrorist. And the guards were standing around going, do we arrest this guy?
Yeah.
We're not quite sure what we're going to do. But then during the Dear Jacques Maire questions, I said, it, where people write out the questions, and it's Dear Jacques Merida. I said, well, now we're going to do the Dear Ahmed questions. And I didn't know what I'd said. And the whole audience goes, And I'm looking around. You can see me look down. I literally thought my pants had popped off. And that's what it sounded like. It's like, And I looked down like this. I'm like, what's going on? And then I realized what I'd said. And it was like,
because, you know, in the comment section to that YouTube video, I always read, did that really happen? Was that, you know, did you do that on purpose? And the answer was
no. I'm not stupid. No. I mean, Audrey, you know, my wife was right over there off stage, and I didn't want to be hauled away, say, see you later. So that was that. Anyway,
but able to sit down for a week
or I'd still be in jail there.
We're not going home, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyway, back to Russell. The interview was great, and what a good guy. And there's also something we reveal in the interview that may come to fruition. And Matt, there's actually been a I actually had a Zoom call with him and me and the other guy that we talk about in the show after the interview, and everybody thinks it's a great idea. And, you know, it's all in the planning stages right now, and it'd probably be a year and a half away. But it's kind of fun what we talked about and the potential and how everybody wants to do this. So you'll see.
Oh, okay. All right. Suspense.
Here we go. My guest today sells out stand-up concerts all over the world. He's been on the Forbes list. He became the first comedian to get a Netflix stand-up special. I call him a friend, but we've never done lunch. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Russell Peters. Russell, how are you?
Hey, good. I'm an LA friend. That's how you get that's what an LA friend is.
That's right. Nobody ever does anything. Anything, ever.
You did drive out to my house one time, which I thought was nice.
Well, yeah. In all honesty, though,
I think it was by accident, but still.
Yeah, I actually drove up into your driveway because I was turning around, having driven by Howie's house.
right, exactly. And then I was like, "Hey, Jeff," and you're like, "Russ."
Yeah, we had no idea you lived there. And honestly, it's a joke that I have with Howie now that I'll drive by his house and honk or wave, and you know he'll never come out, especially now, ever. And also.
Yeah. His driveway's so long, he's never going to hear the honk.
Yeah, it's true. But I told this last time when I interviewed him, we did this last time and I texted him. I said, "We're driving by, open your window and say hi." And we drove by and Audrey goes, my wife goes, "Look, his window's open. Do you think he's going to say hi?" I go, "No, it's a total accident." So what we did that one time is we drove up and I was turning around because we didn't want to go the long way. And I said, "I'll just pull in this driveway." She goes, "No, don't go in there." I go, "No, it's fine. I don't know who this is." So we pulled in right as you walked out the front door.
Hilarious.
Yeah, and I'm like, "Russell, you live here? Wow, nice." I was most impressed with, though, the fort or the kids' play structure thing. Did you put that in?
Oh yeah, the little play area, like the little wooden joint. Yeah, I put that in.
It wasn't little; it was two stories. It's like, but wait, did you do it yourself? Did you build it?
No, hell no, I didn't do myself. Let's not get crazy, Jeff.
Okay, well, you know,
I could see you doing that because you're good, like with working and building things. You build your figures all day.
The dummies. Yeah. Yeah, and you're right. Yeah. I did build the one. It was a kit. It just, you know, you order the kit, and it's just all it shows up is a pile of wood that's been cut, and you have to figure out which pieces go where. So you hired guys to do that, and they probably did it in like
hell yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway. No, there's no way I'm ever going to figure that out.
So listen.
It's a cross. But Dad, you're an atheist. Doesn't matter. It's a cross.
Perfect. We nailed it together. So listen, this part confused me here. So it said you were the first comic to get a Netflix stand-up special. Is that right?
I'm the guy.
What would you get
that started it all.
So you got Amy Schumer money.
No, I didn't. I think maybe that's why we don't work together now.
Yeah. So, you know, because I think I got one of the first ones, I think, because right after I made my deal is when they made the deal with the other guys that got crazy ass money.
Oh, so then you did it in 2015 or 16, you did it.
Yep. And then because we made the two special deal and they locked in the price of the second one. And literally a month after that, they made those giant ones. with the,
20 million a pick, 20 million a special they were giving out after. That was the going rate for anybody but us.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well, here we are.
I was they approached me in 2012 to do it.
Is that right?
And I was so small-minded thinking, it's too that you got to figure it's 9 years ago. They're like, we want to do your next special. I'm like, sure, great. You want to buy it off me? They're like, no, we're gonna pay for it all and produce it, and you're gonna do everything, and then we're gonna own it. I go, okay, and I can still make the DVD, right? And they're like, what? And they go, because I'm thinking DVD still.
Yeah, sure, but you know
what? But what about this DVD part? They're like, no, there's no DVD part. We own it. It's ours. I go, but how do I make money off of it? And they're like, we're gonna give you this money, and then that's it. I go, yeah, but what about the DVDs? Like, you're missing a good chunk of money here.
Yeah. And, you know, so I did my two specials with them, and that's why I went back to Comedy Central. So I've done one with them, did it during the pandemic, but back in September, October, and I got two more coming up. So, and I like that because we can make the DVD. And that's what's sad. I got a shelf back here with my nine of my 10 specials, and there's nine DVDs, and there's one missing. There's two missing. I'm sorry. It's 8 out of the 10. Yeah, it's the Netflix ones. I don't have a DVD, so
yeah. It was good. I mean, it was cool to be the first guy doing it but at the time nobody knew what I was doing. Like, everyone was like, "What are you doing?" I go, "It's going to be on Netflix," and they go, "What's Netflix?" And I go, "They're like, they're going to mail it out to people." Everyone kept thinking they were still mailing it out to people.
I forgot about that. That's right. You have to send stuff back. Oh my gosh, I forgot you had to send the disc back. It was all a disc.
Yeah, they'd send it to you. You watch it for as long as you want, then you got to mail it back.
God, that seems so long ago, doesn't it?
It does. And it really wasn't that long ago.
Wow. All right. So the first question I know everybody asks everybody, first I want to say this. So people who are watching right now, the majority of them, or listening, the majority of them probably know who you are and are fans. But there are a handful of people who are just my fans and listening just because it's me. So,
well, wait. I do find that the most common thread between when people say, "Who are your favorite comics?" they usually lump you, me, and Gabriel together all the time. Whenever I see who's your favorite, they'll be like, "Fluffy, Jeff Dunham, and Russell Peters." It's for some reason the three of us go together.
Then we should do some sort of special.
Oh my God, we should do a tour. That would be insane.
Well, I talked about Gabe about this, and I it would be nuts. But do the audiences cross over? Because this is what I was going to with this next thing, is that it's so interesting how in show business now, in stand-up, in comedy, you can become a star, a huge star the world over, and not be a household name at all. And and it's just nuts because it's so spread out. But it is amazing now compared to, you know, let's say the radio days or whatever, when comedians were huge, like Bob Hope, how you can be an international star now so much easier than you could back then. I don't know my point, but my point is there's kind of room for everybody, but it's also a little bit frustrating.
It is, because they marginalize you when you do it without the machine of the giant networks or studios. When you get famous or popular or whatever it is we become without the studio, they kind of go, all right, well, we're going to stop that part from you forever happening because you did it without us. And it's kind of like, all right, well, I'm still going to be rich, but okay.
Yeah, but
I mean, it's that point. At that point, they're just playing on your ego. And if your ego's in check, then you'll be fine.
But to counter that, you've been doing a lot of TV, and you've been doing you had your show, the detective show, right? What was it called? Sorry.
Oh, yeah, the Indian Detective.
The Indian Detective, yeah. So you've had some great acting roles. So that counters what you're saying, because you've
– No, it doesn't. You know why? Because those were all independent, and then we sold it to them.
Oh.
So everything that I've ever done has been self-propelled. You know, like that Indian Detective was brought to me from like these investors, and then this other guy. It was all came together with like, hey, we want to do this show. We want to build it around you. And none of these are studios. And then we eventually got the package together. We're like, here, we got the money, we got this, we got that. You guys want to be involved? And I'm like, yeah, we'll buy it once you do it. And so that's how that came together.
But then the crazy part is, like, for your specials, and again, I know this is why Netflix loves you, is because you bring in audiences from the all over the globe. Unlike, you know, Joe Schmo here in the States, or in Canada, who does a special or two and gets huge numbers only in the U.S., but Netflix is worldwide, so they love the international, the comics with the international appeal, because you do those huge numbers, right?
Well, I think that was what the thinking was, but then they started branching out, which is good. I mean, they started branching out to other comics in other countries, which is also a pretty smart move because, you know, if you're in the Middle East and they keep showing you North Americans that are doing their impression of what it's like to be Middle Eastern or Indian or Asian or whatever, and they're going to be like, nah, we have our own guy here. How come we're not seeing him? So they started putting the guys on from different regions, and then they started adding them to their count. They still got us. So the good thing for us is that we got expanded, but their local guys got some screen time, but their local guys never got to us.
Well, but that's the appeal of you, though. It's not just I don't think there's a bigger audience than the Indian audience, right? I mean, it's...
Have you been yet?
No, I haven't. I've been asked a couple of times, I think the pandemic got in the way. It's, you know, it's little speed bumps like that.
You better get out there before Terry Fader goes, is all I'm saying.
Okay. duly noted. maybe I could open for you there. That would be fun.
Listen, I'm telling you, if you, me, and Gabe did a show in India, we would do like 100,000 people.
Then why don't we do it? I
don't know. Talk to each other. Let's talk to each other. I'm open to it. I would host it.
I think, oh man, that'd be so much fun. And and what an article, what a write-up. It's like, how do you figure this? You can't. It just, you cannot. Somebody puts that to paper. And then that would be a special all by itself.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. So.
I'm all for it.
Okay, let me ask you this, and this is the other obvious question. With the cancel culture and all that, and that's pretty much what your new podcast is about. And I'll give you the plug here, though. It's on iHeart and Cloud 10 Media Podcast. It's called Culturally Canceled. And does that pretty much explain... You're literally in your backyard talking to folks. Is that correct?
I'm in my backyard having a cigar, having a drink. And it's conversations like, you know, conversations we would have if there was no cameras or recording equipment on.
Right.
And but we're recording it. And if there's something, let's just say, you know, you said something and you're like, shit, you know what? I don't want people. I'll take it out. Right. I'm not trying to aha or bait anybody. So, but for the most part, we've had nobody tell us, hey, can you take that out? Because it's literally just candid conversations that even my friends that know me, we're like, oh my God, this is great. Cause people ask me, what's it like to hang out with Russell? And I go listen to this. It's exactly like that.
And do you loosen them up like Rogan does by, you know, the drinks are free flowing, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
It's so funny for me to watch a podcast like that and watch them, you know, towards the end, it comes completely different than how it began.
Oh man. I remember last time I did Rogan's podcast was July of last year and I got hammered. I remember by the end I was like, there's a podcast called Drink Champs. It's right. It's in Miami. It's a friend of mine. He's a rapper named Noriega.
Yep. No, it's not really. That's the greatest.
Yeah,
name.
His name's he goes by Nori, but it's short for Noriega because he used to be in a group called Capone and Noriega. Anyway, so
perfect.
And and his is like every time they like ring a bell or something, you got to do this shot. So a friend of mine who's also a rapper said, and he's kind of like a gangster guy.
Right.
And he's like, yo, Russ, I'll do it, but I need you to do it with me because I don't drink like that. And I'm like, all right, cool, let's do it. So my buddy came with me. He's like this. Nori was excited to see that guy because he's like a legendary rapper, too. And
right.
So every time they gave my friend Bumpy a shot, I said, don't worry about it, Bump. And I took his shot for him. So I started doing double the shots. And I don't smoke weed, but Nori smokes these insane blunts like this big.
Right.
And he lights one up and he's like, you want some of this? And I'm drunk. I go, give me that. And I hit this thing like I hit it like I smoke. I don't smoke. I'm like, And then he light, maybe about 10 minutes later, he lights up another one. He goes, you know, I go, give me that again. This one's stronger. I go, whatever. And I'm like, and I hit it. And literally 2 minutes later, he's talking to Bumpy, and all you see is this. And he's like, perfect. We'll ask Russell when he wakes up. And I'm like, yeah.
That's great. Makes for great TV, right?
Yeah, and as soon as I went outside, the air hit me and I puked.
Oh, no. Oh, well, that's a lovely ending to the story. It's perfect.
It was a great night.
Yeah. So, look, when you watch your specials, you know, you do a lot of crowd work, which is fantastic. That's some of my favorite things to do, is just messing with folks. Is that a favorite part for you, just messing with people?
That is my favorite part, actually, because you don't know where it's going to go. You don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
You don't know what they're going to say.
And I noticed that was one of your first clips on your channel is that, when you're just messing with dudes in the front row. It had to be because you said, yeah, that's one of my favorite things. We got to put that there. Is that it?
Yeah, basically. I was like, yeah, let's put all the clips they put out now are just crowd work, because I'm not going to give away material for free.
Okay. Right.
And, you know, you can at least laugh. But it's funny now, people are like, same old jokes. I'm like, how's it the same joke, asshole? I didn't fucking say this before.
Right.
The same old jokes. You right. need to write more, bro. Seriously. I'm like, get out of it. Get off my.
But see, that's why it works so great for the crowd, too, and is because they know it's brand new, it's fresh, and they could never have seen this before. I've done that a couple of times when I actually walked out in the crowd with a dummy because there was somebody I was talking to. I wanted to get closer to him, and, you know, one of my favorite ones, we had a big arena, you know, how many thousands of people, and this woman, this girl, it's a female, and I'm talking to her from the stage with the dummy. I can't see her real well. So I walk out there with Peanut, and I'm talking to her, and Peanut kind of starts hitting on her, and then I realize she's really young, so now it's gotten kind of awkward, and and the audience knows it's gotten awkward, and then Peanut has to back off a little bit, and then he says, so who are you here with? And she points down the road, she goes, my dad. Right? And then it's right. So it's, you know, the laughs are huge, and it's even more awkward, and then he says, well, what does he do for a living? And of course he's a cop. And, you know, you can't write that stuff.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You don't know where it's going to go. And then it's just like, wow, it's like the comedy gods go, here's a good one for you. Take this one, Jeff.
Yeah. And then, and of course, people then accuse you of having shills. That they'll come to you afterwards and go, yeah, that was a complete setup.
That's the thing that drives me the most insane. Do you plant the audience? I go, I'm not that good of an actor.
Right. Yeah, yeah, and that's kind of an insult, because it's like, wait, you think that I'm not funny enough to have done that on my own?
Yeah,
right.
It's frustrating.
It's not nice. But so being Indian and having grown up in Canada, you and not being what I am, an older white guy, in this day and age.
I don't think you're that much older than me, though, are you?
Okay, we're both older guys. I just mean older as in we're not young anymore. No, I think I'm I'm 2 years older than you. So you're 57 now, right?
Right. I'm 51.
Wait, where did I read somewhere? Oh, no, I know what it was. I apologize. What it was, you know how I learned the most about you the quickest? Was watching the animated opening to your special, where it basically did your whole life in a cartoon.
Right.
So
my brother's 57.
That's right. That's where it set in my head, because the date, it shows when he was born, and it was before 64. They put his name on there, and that date clicked in my head, and I go, wow, Russell, I'm only 2 years apart. So I apologize. So
oh, that's you look great then.
Huh?
You look great.
I look great for almost 60. Yay, I'm 60 in 2 weeks.
You really do. I mean, white people generally age horribly. You look fantastic.
Thanks. I don't know. You know, my wife is, you're not like vegetarian or vegan, are you?
No.
Oh, I didn't think so. Yeah. My wife did that to us a couple of years ago. And so I'll still eat the meat now and then just because I want to and I love it. But 95% of the time, and I honestly think that's had a lot to do with me not looking horrible as of yet. I don't know.
It really does put the brakes on the whole aging thing.
Really?
Yeah,
I guess. You know what's funny is you'll get to that point now where you have friends that are your age and you look like you're in pretty good shape and are doing well. But you'll have friends from like high school, people who have stayed in a small town, and they just have given up.
Are you kidding? I'm in Toronto right now.
Right.
My friends, I'm just like, dude, what? How are you still doing the exact same thing we were doing when we were 14? And like literally, I'm like, what are you doing? Like your time management is horrible. Your ability to comprehend things outside of this local little circle is frustrating.
Well, there's that, but there's also the point where they think they're old, and they will start acting old, and they will start looking old, and you'll be going, what am I doing different? Why do I, you know what I mean? Has it gotten to that point at all yet?
Well, most of them are black, so they don't actually look that old.
I know that's, you know what? I used to compliment, if I'd meet a black woman, I would say, oh my gosh, it's not fair. I go, you guys just don't age. And you mm-hmm. can't, I can't say that now.
You sure can. Listen, I'm one of those believers in intent, and people really need to focus on the intent behind the words, not the words. Because when your intention is that your intention is to be complimentary, then that's how it should be. That's how it should be read. It shouldn't be read any other way. But then I talk about it in my new act. I'm talking about, like, you know, the difference between tone and intent. And I said, if you were to hand me a transcript of everything I said tonight and didn't tell me it was me, I would cancel myself.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you close your eyes and listen to your act, and you don't have an accent except for the accent that we're all familiar with.
Right, I was born in Canada, so you kind of don't get that.
Yeah, right. And then that is funny, you know, whenever I joke about that whenever I'm in another country with a dummy, the dummy says, well, their accent. I go, they don't have an accent. We have an accent. So anyway, but my point is, if an American or a Canadian would close their eyes, you sound like a white dude making fun of other races, right?
Hilarious.
Just the same way that you say if you just saw it written, you'd be canceled. So it's so crazy to me, but I get it. I understand it. The seeming license that anybody other than somebody like me tends to have, because you get away with so much, but it's all legit. It's all funny stuff. And everybody in the place is laughing. Has there been any blowback? Have you had to pull back at all in the last few years?
No. I'll tell you why you won't either. You won't either have to do that either. Because the people that are coming to see you are coming to see that. And the people that have a problem with what you're doing, we're never going to come and see you.
Right.
And we're never going. So people that have a problem with that kind of stuff just are not going to contact you. They're not going to come to your shows. They already know what you do. And if they have a problem with it, then it's some sort of witch hunt for you at that point. But
then it becomes frustrating online because everybody has a voice now. And you will.
That's irritating.
You will be trashed to no end as being this horrible, horrible person. It's like, have you been to my show? Have you, instead of taking these two lines out of context, do you know what came before and after and what else I talked about and picked on? Do you not understand? Yeah. This is like, okay, I've never thought of this before. This is like tasting a spoonful of salt and going, well, that cake is horrible.
Yeah.
It's.
Yeah, you put the salt and the sugar beside each other.
Yeah, you mix the stuff together and then it's a whole thing. You can't just taste the salt and think that the cake is horrible. I'm going to keep that analogy.
The egg is raw because it's not been mixed.
That's right. Okay, so then now I'm curious about and forgive me if this is a little bit trite, but I'm curious about the Apu thing, because the Apu thing, it's like, you know, I mean, where do you stand on this? Because you are Indian, you poke fun at your own heritage. So where do you stand on this whole thing?
I'm actually in the documentary, the Apu documentary.
Oh, you are? Well, I need to watch it. I've just heard about
it. Was it called The Problem with Apu?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. Growing up, we had nobody to look at on TV.
Right.
Like when I started doing stand-up, I started in 89. And there was nobody. I was the first Indian guy.
Right.
And so growing up, if I really wanted to feel like I connected with somebody on TV, and I'm not making this up, I connected with Eric Estrada because he looked Indian as hell. Okay. And in Canada, we didn't have Mexican people. So I'm like, wow, look at this Indian guy on Chips. And then Paul Rodriguez on Hey Pablo. And I was like, oh man, we're doing it. We're really, and they're like, I was like, Mom, what's a Mexican?
Oh no, that's funny.
What part of India is Mexicans from?
That's really funny.
And we had, you know, we just had that to look at. And then it wasn't until I was a little older that I realized, oh my God. And then Apu came on The Simpsons. And I was like, we'll take him, I guess. I mean, we got nothing else.
Well, I did watch a couple of clips, and it was, I don't think you were in the group. There was a group of, were they all comics or all actors in comics, people in show business? And they said, I guess the question was asked, does Apu offend you? And everybody raised their hand, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's a younger generation. I can't remember what I said in that, mm-hmm. but I must have said something similar to what I just said now, because yeah. we really didn't have anybody. We was like, yeah, it was offensive, because the only reason it was offensive was more because people would use it against you. You know, people would call you Apu, or people would call you, Johnny Quest Haji? They would call you that.
That was the question they asked. Have you all been called Apu? And they all went, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the hardest part of your life, get the fuck over it already. You know what I mean? It's just like, grow up. I got bullied. Like, I got real racism I dealt with growing up. So I Apu was the least of my worries. You know, when I'm 4 or 5 years old and I'm a cute little 4 or 5 year old boy, and a grown white man sprays me with a hose and spits on me or calls me names, or when I go to the park, I get kicked or punched for no reason. That's the problem. That's what was happening to me. So Apu was like, whatever. It's a cartoon. It's not real.
That's what was happening to you. Is that right?
Yeah, in the 70s. In Canada in the 70s was not so nice to Indian people. It was very unfavorable to be Indian in Canada at that time.
What was there a neighborhood, or were you just an outlier, your family in the house?
No, there was no, there wasn't a big influx of, well, there might have been, but we were spread out. And where I ended up growing up, we moved to in like 1974, 1975, Brampton, at the time was just blue collar white people and working class black people. So I hung around the black kids because they never did anything to me. They never bothered me. They never bullied me. So I was like, oh, okay, I'm safe here. And I would see white people and I would generally turn around because I'm like, I'm not going to get kicked or punched for no reason right now. Mm-hmm. And now the ironic part is my hometown is like 98% Indian.
Yeah. That's where you did that special, right?
Oh, I did it in Toronto.
Oh, but they talked about how do you pronounce it?
Brampton.
Brampton. They talked about Brampton being your hometown. So how far is Brampton from Toronto? Is it
like 20 minutes?
Okay.
North. Oh. 20 minutes northwest.
Right.
But I mean, listen, if I'm a real soft piece of work, I'm going to let that affect me to today and be like, white people are evil. This is all bad. But it was a question of these new immigrants came to the country and they didn't know what to do. So they panicked and that's how they reached out and they lashed out. Now you can't live in the past with, oh, this is how they are. It's like, it's just how they were. And when new immigrants come in, they do it to those immigrants. So it's just kind of like almost human nature, I guess.
Right. Well, getting back to the performing part of it, it is kind of a conundrum for me because you can't please everybody all the time. And there is a point where you go, well, just screw it. I'm just going to entertain my crowd and the people that I love. But at the same time, I still like to bring in new fans. And there are things that I refuse to take out of my act, and I will keep them in there just because I've done them or I've had those characters for so long and people love them. And if I took them out, that would almost be worse.
Yes. You would be trying to appeal to people that were never going to be appealed to.
Right. And I think
you're going to lose your core because the core, they're with you because they're like, we know this is our guy. We know what we're going to get. He's not going to offend us because we know him.
Right. Yeah. But on the other hand, you do know as a performer that line with your crowd that you want to push to the edge of, and the closer you get to the edge, the harder they're laughing. But then, you know, there's that point where suddenly, now a bunch of them are not laughing because you did go too far, but that's that magic little line you have to go up to, right?
Yeah. You got to figure it out and you know where it is when you're doing it. And some, you know, there'll be some nights where you can't go as far as you did the night before. And then there'll be other nights where you can go past the line.
Right. And is there one incident where can you recall anything where you just went too far and went, oh, that wasn't good. Or it actually did get you into trouble in any of those really good stories?
Well, one night I asked, there was a couple in the audience and I said, I'm talking to them and I'm like, do you have any kids? And they go, yeah. We had three, and I go, what do you mean we had three?
Oh, no.
Well, one died, right? And then it just put a whole funk in the audience, right?
Oh, man.
And then I go, don't try and fuck up my show with your dead kid.
Oh, no.
And it worked.
It worked. Oh.
It worked because it was so extreme to say something like that. And they even laughed.
Oh, no. That's brilliant.
Like, oh, my God. Thank goodness for that because I was scared to shit.
That's
like,
brilliant and horrible.
Oh, man, you're going to fuck up my whole show.
I just turned red at that. Yeah. And I, doing what I do with the other guy, I love what I do because I can do point and counterpoint. So if something
and you can blame it on him.
Absolutely. And I'll say it's just part of the, and it is part of the act because I will push it further with the dummy knowing that I can pull it back and go, wait a second. And so my favorite ad libs are when something like that happens and I act just as astonished at the audience. But you also know how ad libs in. When that came out of your mouth, you know that came from a part of your brain that you weren't controlling. And it just came out of your mouth and there was no getting it back, right?
Yeah, it was literally reactionary. It's like the guard that is the filter went, hey, I'm going to go to the bathroom. And you're like, the word just came out.
That's right. I was talking to Adam Carolla the other day, and I think what I told him was I think that part of his success is because he doesn't his inner voice, he's somehow hooked up to his mouth. He has his own network. He has his own show. He doesn't care if the only people he has to answer to are the advertisers. But if they don't like it, they'll go away. And then fine, there's a bunch of them standing in line. So it's just kind of refreshing for me to hear that. And it's also refreshing to hear that from you because I think.
Did Adam let you speak on your show?
Yeah, you were on it. Okay. He was on my show. He was on my show.
But did he let you speak on it?
Well, yeah, it was a really different tone and a different take because when you're on his show, and I told him that towards the end of the interview, that it was like, whenever I'm on your show, I don't know why I'm there.
I did it 2 weeks ago, and I was like, do you need me here for this?
Yeah. And were you sitting there? Were you in studio or on Zoom?
No, it was on Zoom, and I was just like, he's talking, and I'm kind of like,
But at least they can
draw let me know when you're done.
Yeah, at least they can see it's sneaky because now he draws in your audience. He advertises you're going to be on, but it's still just his show.
That's fine.
Yeah,
it's supposed to be. We're supposed to counter off each other.
Yeah, right. It's I worked with Mickey Rooney for 1 year. I was in an off-Broadway show, and it's not quite to the point, but talking to Mickey Rooney, who was a crazy genius, it was talking a carry on a conversation with Mickey Rooney was like this. I agree. Yeah, absolutely. that's pretty much all you did because he just chatted and chatted. All right. So again, that's really refreshing to hear from you. And I do think that there has to be some sort of backlash coming.
There is. It's coming.
You think. And you think we're going to be back to doing what it is that we want to do or that we enjoy doing and people are going to grow a couple.
Let me ask you this. Have you ever physically met one of these outraged people?
My answer should be no, but right. I did have is when I first moved to Los Angeles and nobody knew who I was. And I was doing that thing, you know, going around to the comedy clubs, doing the guest spots and doing horribly. Because here, you know how LA is, especially when you go to the, the
store.
Improv. Melrose Improv. And, it's like, okay, so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so. And now the puppet show. And I get up with a dummy. And it was just, it was half my fault because I was just intimidated by that room. But I was doing something, some sort of thing. And I had Jose Jalapeno on the stick, right? And mm-hmm. I've always tried to make sure that he was just Jose Jalapeno. And Peanut and he have a thing. And Jose always one-ups Peanut somehow. And he's just, he's a jalapeno on a stick. That's it. And Mexican jalapeno. And he's changed nationalities throughout the routine just for the sake of jokes, right? And so I did have this one woman come after the show. We had to get in a van to go somewhere. She goes, you're horrible. I'm like, what? She goes, I can't believe you're doing that. It's horrible. You should never even be allowed on stage. I'm like, what did I do? And she was just incensed, and it was a white woman. And I'm like,
yeah, well, that's,
yeah.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's like, it's the people that are getting outraged are never the people that are being spoken about. And that's, I actually did a joke about it on one of my specials 15 years ago. And I said, people are getting mad on behalf of other people, which is even more frustrating because that means you think that the people that are being spoken about are too dumb to get it themselves and that you have to point it out for them. Maybe they're not offended and it's you who has a superiority complex that makes you feel smarter than everybody else that they should be offended. They're like, no, asshole, we're not offended. It's you and you're over hypersensitive. And maybe it's your own demons that are getting bothering you. Maybe there's something that has struck a chord with on you and you felt, oh my God, I've been repressing these feelings for so long. I need to fight this more.
Well, you know, it's the same thing with Fluffy and Speedy Gonzales because he plays Speedy Gonzales in an upcoming, I don't know what it is. And, you know, with Slowpoke and Speedy Gonzales, they, you know, people are saying how horrible and racist and blah, blah, blah. And so many of the Hispanic folks spoke up and said, leave one of our heroes alone. We love Speedy Gonzales.
Yeah.
So to your point, that's it. Right.
Yeah, it's, but I've never, but listen, okay, so you met a person who was offended by one thing that you did one night.
Right.
But the actual outraged people, the whole cancel culture people, I don't know who they are.
No.
I've never physically seen them. I think they're fucking bots.
Yeah, oh, that's funny. Yeah, exactly. It's a, yeah, we're in a simulation and the kid and the dad that are playing our game are sending those things out just to screw yeah. with us and see how we handle it. Yeah.
Yeah, they've unlocked a new level.
Well, that's right. Well, you know, I've always said this, that things started heading downhill when the smartphone came out. Because, you know, usually, and I said this as well the other day, it's very obvious. Before everybody had a voice, if you got mad at somebody, you talk about it with your family or your friends, and that's it. But now you get mad about something. It's like everybody has the equal powerful voice by putting it on whatever social media platform. And then yeah. it can get picked up. And no matter who you are, you can be Joe Schmuck the idiot and just put the right words together and suddenly you're famous.
Oh, yeah. It's very, yeah, it's frustrating. It is very frustrating because it's arbitrary. The rules aren't written. The rules are according to which way the wind is blowing that day.
And then there's the thought that if something goes down, like this thing with Georgia, you know, the advice could be just ride it out for 3 days and just don't react at all if you're a big corporation and it'll go away. And that's kind of true. It's a little, and you can, there can be a little misdirection. Something bigger happens and then people forget about it.
I always say, listen, when you get into that social media shitstorm and you become the guy under fire, if you're quiet, you don't say anything, it'll go away after about 3, 4, or 5 days.
Yeah.
And it does. I had something happen to me in Canada in 2017, something that they tried to make it seem like I said something.
Sure.
They really just, they reframed what I said it to suit their purpose.
Yeah.
And I was getting calls all day and it was a pain in the ass. And everybody was like, well, why did he say this? And what does that mean? And I didn't respond. And after 3, 4 days, it went away. And I was like, really?
Oh, you chose not to respond at all.
It made me feel like shit those days.
So even though you were taken completely out of context and that wasn't what you said and you were getting right. all the accusations, you just chose to ignore it.
Yeah, because the minute you start defending it,
sure.
you're going to get the counters and people are going to come up with other arguments to prove that you said something you didn't say. And you're like, I'm not going to play this game. I always say this. I'm responsible for what I say. I'm not responsible for what you hear.
Wow. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and there have been a handful of folks in the media lately in the last few months that you go, why did you come back and make that apology like that? Why?
Yeah.
You're just playing right into it.
Especially comics. Comics should not play that game.
Right. Yep. Yep.
The minute they do that, they feel like they can get you. Then they're going to be like, we can control these guys. We're good.
Well, when I did my NBC special, they said, no, Jose.
Really?
Of course. Of course
they
did.
You should have said, I thought you were trying to get the Hispanic community.
Yeah.
Isn't your wife Hispanic?
And that's true. And people, you know, the Hispanic folks that come to my show, who's their favorite guy? It's Jose Jalapeno and Estique.
Well, there's a reason the Arabs love you, because of Ahmed the terrorist.
Well, also, don't forget, though, the Israeli folks do as well. And it's it's so funny. And I've said this too many times, meaning too many times I've just repeated myself. But the last world tour that we did, you know, I'm one night I'm in Abu Dhabi and there's 4,000 folks there in the audience, and I bring Ahmed out and it's like a freaking homecoming, you know? And I was scared to death to even be there doing the show, because I didn't know, did we sell this place out because they want to kill me or because they love me? I didn't know which it was. And all right, I'll tell you a quick story. So, you know, I use the hair powder because I got a light spot back here, right? So
I do it. The topics, I use it too.
The topics, yeah, topics. So, and I use it mainly back here because, you know, you turn around the bright lights, you got the big bald spot back there. So, you know,
right.
So I used it. And we got there to the show in Abu Dhabi, which was a 30-minute drive from the hotel. Got to the venue, and it was, you know, like 35 minutes before the show, and I'm getting everything ready. Now it's, and I always wait to the last second to get dressed to do the, you know, get ready. Always the last. You do the same thing?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I don't know why that is, but I
show up with my hair not done. My hair's like this when I get there, and then right before I go on, I'm like, okay, yep. Let's do it. Let's go, guys.
Yep. I'm the same way. And I have two things that I check before I go on stage. I check to make sure there's nothing hanging out of my nose and that my pants are zipped up. That's it. Every right. time. Right. Okay. So, by the way, did you ever see the clip where Carson walks out on stage and he's like a minute into the monologue and he puts his hands in his pants and he's got in his flies open. He's got white underwear on. Did you ever see that clip?
Oh no.
That's oh my gosh. It was genius, because, and everybody's laughing and as anybody, he's confused as what they're laughing at. He didn't know what just happened. He's looking around and then he looks down and he sees it open. He goes, oh my gosh. And he turns around back to the audience, zips it up, turns right back around and just keeps going.
Hilarious.
It was great. Right.
Side note. If you do, I've been watching, because I'm in quarantine, I've been watching Charles Grodin on Carson interviews, and they're friggin' hilarious. Anyway, continue back.
All right. That duly noted. I will go look. So, yes. So we're there in Abu Dhabi getting ready to go on. There's 4,000 people in the crowd. And, my manager at the time, Robert Hartman, you know, Robert, right?
I know Robert, yeah.
Yeah. So, and this had never happened in all the shows that we did in this world tour. Huge number of shows. He comes back and he goes, and again, I'm terrified to be there. And our curtain peaked, and all the guys in the Dish Dash outfits, all in white, and the women slightly behind them, all in black. It's like, oh my gosh, what am I doing here? And Robert comes back and he goes, we're going to have to hold the show about 10 minutes. And I go, the crowd isn't in yet? He goes, no, the bomb-sniffing dogs haven't finished. I'm like, the bomb-sniff, what the hell, right? So it's like, oh, my God. So now I'm more terrified. So I'm getting ready. Audrey, my wife, standing there. I go, I need the hair powder. She goes, you brought the hair powder. I go, I didn't bring any hair powder. She goes, what do you mean you didn't bring hair? And this is, I'm taping for a special, right? So I have to look the same. And it's not, you know, it's a little bit everywhere. So it fills in everything. I can't go without
the, about it.
Because I'll look completely different. It'll be like, he has hair and every, this will be a ruined show and a ruined, we won't be able to use Abu Dhabi because I'll look half bald in that one shot. Bright lights, thinning hair, what? So I'm like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? So Audrey says, hang on, I have an idea. And Starbucks has, I can't remember the name of it, but it's the micro powder instant coffee. I can't remember the name of it.
Hilarious.
But it's the micro powder. It's not like ground. It's like powder that goes into your, it starts with a T. I can't remember what it's called. She goes, this is brown. I'm like, oh my God, you're a freaking genius. So I take this powder and I just like the topics. I put it all over my head, covers up the bald spots, same color, perfect, right? I go out on stage and I'm about 30 minutes into the act and suddenly I am really into this show. Because the caffeine has somehow absorbed into my system because I'm hot and sweaty and it's like I am on fire and killing it, right? And then, unbeknownst to me, Stu, who's one of the other producers, who was the production company, He turns to my buddy, Jeff Rothpan, who writes for me and is a friend. He was on the trip as well. He goes,
I know Jeff very well, too. Yeah.
He goes, is Dunham bleeding? And Rothpan goes, what? He goes, is Dunham bleeding? Because down my head, I'm pulling a, who was it that did that just recently?
Oh, whatchamacallit, Giuliani.
Oh, yeah, Giuliani. So just like Giuliani, I had this thing coming down my head, and in the lights, it looked like I was bleeding. And Rothpan goes, no, it's coffee.
Stu goes, you know, Rothpan's so deadpan.
Exactly. And Stu goes, what? Never mind. And then Audrey goes, oh, yeah, just coffee coming off his head. And Stu's like, what the hell are you talking about? So they stop down tape, and Audrey walks out with a towel and goes, your head is dripping coffee. I'm like, my what? So she has to wipe it off. And then we walk back, and we just kept the show going. So you can't write
that. That's pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah.
And I was going to ask you before you even got to it. I was like, didn't the caffeine get to you?
Oh, yeah. It was awesome. So now I sprinkle coffee on my head before every show. I don't get reflux.
Got a big show coming up.
Yeah, I don't get reflux.
Starbucks, honey.
Exactly. All right. Culturally canceled. So has there been any group, that's the name of your podcast, has there been any group that really has tried to cancel you and say, that's it, we're not doing it anymore?
No, not yet.
Okay, not yet. So there's never been a group that said, Russell Peters, no, he's not our thing, that's it, he's offensive. You just tread that line and you do it well, and nobody cares.
I think the thing is, if your intentions are pure, and if you have ill intentions, yeah, you're probably going to get caught out, but when your intentions are not that, they can't bring you down, because they can't bring you down for something you're not doing.
Right, right. Well,
so it's unfair.
Has there been any point, and this is how I, when we invite guests, this is how I sell it. I love talking to people about the high points. We always talk to people about that, their greatest successes, but I also like to talk about the down points. And you've been doing this stand-up since
89.
Okay. That's a long time.
32 years.
That's great. So has there been a point where you went, I don't know if this is going to work out for me. I really wanted to do stand-up.
There's many points. There was points in the beginning. There was points. There's points now. Still, sometimes not recently, but in the past year, that I was like, you're always second guessing yourself. And I think that's the beauty of stand up is that you're never above failure.
You're one show away from being done.
You're always one show away from being done. I think that's what keeps us there. I mean, I want to tell you something. You know, I had open for me a couple of years ago, which I'm sure somebody you watched growing up as much as I did. I had Willie Tyler and Lester open for me a couple of years ago.
Oh, that's great. And he's still around. He's still kicking it, right?
Yep. 80 years old now, Willie.
Wow. And so the point was that he opened for you. So he's never been done, right?
Yeah, he's a guy that he opened for the Temptations. He was a staple on TV in our childhoods. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Just the good thing is, I when I meet legendary people, I want to do legendary things with them, and even if it's just to be in their presence, but to have them like say, yeah, I'd love to open for you. I'm like, what? I had Paul Anka come up to me and tell me we should go on tour together. I'm like, I'm pretty sure we have two different audiences, Paul.
Have you ever seen the video of him doing Jump?
No, Van Halen?
Oh, yeah. He does Van Halen. He does Jump. And he's got the whole band, you know, pick up their trumpets going, Jump. Like, no.
Hilarious. No. Yeah, no. He was like, you know what? We're both Canadian boys. We're both from immigrant families. You know, I'm Lebanese. You're Indian. We should do this. I'm like, what?
It doesn't make any sense at all. Well, you know, I opened for Julio Iglesias a number of times.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's like the worst possible idea ever. Why? Because what percentage of his audience actually speaks English as their native tongue?
And wants to hear a comedian. They're there to hear this sexy, romantic man, and then you come out, hey, guys.
Yeah, yeah. Good impression of me. Thanks, Russell. Nice. So, yeah.
That's how I do it.
Yeah, they don't want to see a comedian, and much less a comedian with a dummy. It was like, and then, and this was when I was really early in show business, really early. I remember I walked back after the fourth show, and I walked to my stage, and I go, Julio, I don't understand. It seems like there's all the same people in the front row, the same women. He's like, oh, no, don't tell me that. Because these groupies would follow him everywhere and always be in the front row. Yeah, it's horrible.
And now we work with Gabriel Iglesias. See how times have changed.
Exactly. So, all right. So the acting versus the stand-up, is it apples and oranges? If you had to pick one, is apples there one you like more? It really? So one just goes with the other.
Yeah. I mean, like, I wanted to get into acting. I wanted to be an actor, blah, blah, blah. Then after you've done some acting, you're like, if I get it, I get it. If I don't, I don't. And you got to go work these 14-hour days. No, good. Thank you. I'm good. I'll wait. No, I'll go do a couple of live shows. an hour.
I know. That's it. People say, okay, you can have this television gig. And I'm like, wait, I'm going to work how long? For what? And what are the hours? And wait a minute. Hold on a second. I can walk on stage and talk for 2 hours and be done and make the same thing in that I worked for 3 months? I don't think so.
Yeah. It's got to be, the trade-off isn't there yet.
Yeah, I have to learn that you dance with who brung you and you really appreciate where you are, because the grass is always greener. But like you say, I think that's what keeps people like us going. You don't think you're good enough, or you think it's going to end any minute if you don't keep going. And so you never are you ever able to sit back and enjoy this? Did you, like, during the pandemic, have you sat back and said, I'm just going to relax here for a minute?
I did at first for like the first 2 months.
Yep.
And then I started getting a little batty, because then I didn't know where the end was. We still don't know where the end is, but it seems to be more in sight now than it was then. And even when it first started, I think I even called it. I said, I bet you this thing's not going to end this year. Yep. But they can't tell you that, so they're going to tell it to you 2 weeks at a time. Whatever happened to flattening the curve for 2 weeks, now we're going to go back to normal.
Well, you mentioned you just got off the road, so you've been doing gigs?
Yeah, I've been doing gigs. I've been everywhere. Texas, Florida, Georgia. I was in New Jersey.
So what
I like doing clubs. I mean, for me, that's like, I liken everything to boxing. It's like in boxing, if you want to get, say you got a big fight coming up.
Yeah.
You're not just going to show up with the big fight. You got to go to the gym and get stinky and work and spar with guys and get your ass beat and figure it out. And then when you get to the title shot, you're ready.
Right. No, so I consider
the big stages, the world title defense matches, and then the clubs or the gym, and that's kind of the necessary part of it all.
Right. And so, but like if you're in Texas, how big did they cut it down? Are you like half houses or what are they?
Well, when I was in Texas, was in December was the last time I was there. So it was 50% at that point, but I think it's now 100%. So I wouldn't mind going back to Texas anytime soon.
Sure.
And Florida, you would never know that it was a lower capacity. Florida was insane. I did Naples and they were socially distancing 6 inches apart.
That's great. Well, yeah. So let me ask you this. I saw this in the notes and I really wanted to ask you this because I've just been such a fan for forever. So working with Shatner in your Indie Detective series, I mean, is that guy, is what you see what you get? I've just imagined that he is. That he. Here's what my take on Shatner, and see if I'm accurate. He has a huge ego, but he also has a great sense of humor about it. He can take a joke, but don't piss him off. Am I close?
Well, you got to also understand, he's 90 years old now.
Wow.
So when I worked with him, he was 87.
Right.
86, 87. I think he was 86 at the time. He actually turned 86 while we were shooting.
Yeah.
And I was so in awe. So the first scene we're doing together, I'm so in awe to see William Shatner standing in front of me and talking, that we're doing this scene and he walks in and he's like, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like this. And he's like, I think you have a line. I go, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I was watching you.
I was like,
I can't believe I'm working with TJ Hooker.
No, you didn't say that. Oh my God.
I did tell him that. He laughed.
Okay. Oh,
he's
that's
Canadian too. So we bonded on that as well.
Right. Speaking of bonding, by the way, the jiu-jitsu thing, who knows about you? Your other interests are hip hop, martial arts, and boxing. So the jiu-jitsu thing, and when did you start that, as a kid?
No, I started jiu-jitsu about 5.5 years ago.
Oh, because my dad, he had the longest running, oldest real estate appraisal business in Dallas ever. But He didn't, mm-hmm. he took that over from his father, my grandfather. But my dad, when he was just out of college, or I think he went to UCLA for a little while as well. He was at SMU in Dallas and then UCLA out here. But when he came out of here, he tried to make it in show business, and he had learned jujitsu back in Dallas, and he came out here and he was a stuntman. And so I didn't know what jujitsu was, but he was a stuntman for a little while. His greatest claim to fame was he was in a movie with Gene Kelly and Judy Garland called The Pirate. And he and Gene Kelly got in a fight. So there you go.
In real life or in the movie?
No, in the movie. Speaking of real life, he had to teach Gene Kelly a lot of the moves and the throws. And apparently Gene Kelly did it wrong once, and my dad kneed him in the crotch, and he was out. Gene Kelly was out for a while. So
hilarious. Yeah, no, there's a lot of stunt guys that train at my gym. About three or four stunt guys that train at my gym. And every time I'm on a set or something, and they'll be like, they'll see me with a jiu-jitsu sweater or a hat on, they'll be like, you train? And I go, yeah. Oh, yeah, me too. I'm a black belt under blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, wow, I'm about to be a purple belt. You know, so we got all these. It's like this nerdy little jiu-jitsu world.
And is that your main hobby, other interest thing going on besides that? The boxing, the hip-hop, it's all equal.
That's the thing that keeps my brain sharp and my body sharp. Hip-hop is just something I grew up with. I mean, it's, you know, I was around hip-hop from the beginning of it. Well, not the beginning. I came in about when hip hop must have been about 9 years old, and then I fell in love with it. And I don't love where it's at now, but for me, it's DJing. I've been DJing since 1985. So when they put hip hop, I think they kind of just lump it all together. But I'm like, when it comes to DJing, it's not just, I don't just play hip hop. I actually very rarely play hip hop when I'm DJing. I'm 9 times out of 10 play classic rock and mix up all these old songs from the 70s just to see what I could do with them.
Well, you know, when I was a kid in junior high, when the weekends would come along, junior high and high school, when the weekends would come along and there was no dummy shows, no gigs, I had my own little DJ. So that's something else we have in common, Russell. I had my own little DJ business with my buddy named Glenn Gaines. And this was the name that I gave. And junior high, I was like, 15 years old when I named it. But we had business cards printed up, and it was actually a baby blue card, kind of mystical looking. And we were called Crystal Freedom. and I had no idea how hip that actually was at the time.
You know what's funny is the names that we thought of back then, like my brother's friend opened up a nightclub in the 80s, yep. And like must have been on 86,
right.
And it was called Urban Music Assault. It's like, this is the dumbest name I've ever heard.
Yeah. All right, last question, I'll let you go. We talked about a little bit of the down, but if you had to pinpoint, and I hated when people would ask me this question, but I knew the answer. If you had to pinpoint the point in your career or your life that if that hadn't happened, you don't know if you'd be here today. Is there a fork in the road right there, or one of those alternate universes going on where you are not who you are right now?
I think if I had not done this special that I did in 2003, I wouldn't be where I am today.
And I'm sorry, tell me which special that is.
So I it was my third special.
Right.
My first was 95, then 97, then 2003. So I had a 6-year gap where I didn't do any specials.
Right. And they were where? Where did they air?
In Canada.
And what was the network, or what was it?
They were network ones. Like, so the first one was on the CBC. It was called Comics.
Oh.
And there was like a series they did on comedians that would get a 30-minute special on TV.
Got it.
And I got the first one in 95, and then that did really well, and I got another one in 97, but that was too soon.
Right.
It was way too soon, and you got to figure, 95, I'd been doing it 6 years, 97, I'm 8 years in. Writing at a faster pace at that time just wasn't a thing.
Right.
I was a road comic. I just kind of looked at it as, well, you get this, and then you continue back on the road. Like, it didn't mean anything.
Right.
It didn't equal more money. It equaled like, oh, well, now you've got a credit.
Right.
You know, so 97, they gave me another special on a different network because they saw the success of the other one.
Yep.
And I fell short on that one a little bit.
Right.
And then that same company kept doing specials. And then it wasn't till 6 years later where I got another special. But in that 6 years, I had 6 years to really, really shine up a set, make it really bulletproof.
Right.
And I did that special in August of 2003. When I did it, I was broke as a joke. When I tell you, Jeff, when I tell you broke, I mean broke. They paid me $7,500 for that special. And I was like, yes, I'll take it.
And that was, you said 06, is that what you said?
03.
03, yeah. And so that one,
when I got the check, I signed it and paid bills. I didn't even get any money from it.
And why? And so that special, because you prepared so well for it, you knew the material backwards and forwards, you killed with it. Mm-hmm. And was it material that spoke to the time, to the audience? Was it evergreen?
I don't know. I don't know what really clicked about it, but somebody, it aired in 2004.
Right.
And somebody had recorded it and chopped it up. And it started getting sent out as emails to people like, hey, check out this guy talking about Italians. Hey, check out this guy talking about Chinese people. Check out this guy talking about Indian people. Check out this guy talking about Jamaican people. And so back then you would get the file sent to you and you'd have to download it. It would take you about 25 to 30 minutes to download a 4-minute clip.
So this was slightly pre-YouTube.
Right. So YouTube started in June of 05.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And once YouTube started, then somebody put the whole thing and then that the whole world changed for me then.
And that's it. Yeah, that was just kind of the same with me as well. It's when, you know, I came out with my first special, which I kind of pulled back on. I was conservative with it. I didn't want to offend all my conservative friends. Conservative meaning no curse words. It was, you know, clean and all that. Then the second one, I went, I got to do something a little more edgy. Then I came out with Ahmed the Dead Terrorist, and that's when YouTube got big, and this was 07, and mm-hmm. it just went off the... boom. And that's, you know, if that hadn't happened to me, then we wouldn't be sitting here talking. So,
yeah.
Well, man, I congratulate you on all your success and all that you're continuing to do. And, last thing, you were named one of Rolling Stone's 50 best stand-up comics of all time, setting records right. in arenas around the world. And that's the thing. You're not just here, not just North America, not just Canada. You're all over the world, the country's everywhere. And I think people should, if they haven't checked you out enough, they need to check out some more. Your Netflix clips, you got stuff on YouTube, you have your own podcast now, and Culturally Canceled. Is it on Apple? Of course it is, Spotify.
It's on Apple. It's on iHeartRadio. It's wherever you get your podcast from. It's Perfect. Available there.
That's great. Well, I wish you great success with that. And I'm not kidding when I say if you want to go to India, you, me, and Fluffy, we got to split the money three ways.
Oh my God, we
I told Gabe we should do a show together. But now you had the three of us. I mean, that would make news all over the planet.
Oh yeah, a white guy, an Indian, and a Mexican go to India. I mean, it'd be amazing.
And a dead terrorist.
And a dead terrorist.
Awesome. All right. So, again, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Russell Peters, thanks, buddy. And I hope to see you on another one real soon.
Thanks, Jeff. And say hi to the wife and the kids for me.
I'll do it. All right. All right, we're back. And we're back with Peanut. Peanut.
Yes, I enjoyed Russell Peters, and it's good to see you, Jeff, and Mr. McNeil. Matt, how are you both? All good?
Hey, good. Doing okay.
Well. Oh, thank you. Okay.
So, Peanut, we're going to introduce a clip.
Yes, this is a clip that I would say is fairly famous of mine, don't you think, Matt? It is famous, correct?
I'd say it's probably one of your most famous clips.
Okay, good.
And, Peanut, why did you choose this?
I chose this clip because Mr. Russell Peters tends to have too many consonants in his name. He's using unneeded consonants, like another guy we know, Jeff Fafa. But now it's Russ's, ilalol. Right? Russ's, ilalol. Yes, that's it. So, thank you. That's why I'm here. Russ's, ilalol, and Jeff Fafa.
Okay. Yeah. Oh my. Thanks for the intro.
Okay. All right. Here comes the clip. It's comedy genius.
Why did you interrupt me? You mispronounced my name. What? You mispronounced my last name.
I know.
It's Dunham. Now, when you look at it, it says Dunham, just Dunham. Ham. You're the other white meat. Don't confuse everyone, it's Dunham. It says Dunham, hum, hum, hum.
Just Dunham.
.com.
Just Dunham.
.com.
You know, when you think about it for 30 seconds, it's actually Jeff-fa-fa-dun-ham.
.com.
What? Jeff-fa-fa-fa-fa? You're using an unneeded F. Jeff-fa-fa-dun-ham.
.com.
Am I pissing you off, fa-fa?
All right, Pina, that was pretty good.
It wasn't pretty good. It was fantastic. There's no doubt about it. I am the comedic genius, I guess. Okay, great. Yeah. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Be sure and tune in next week for our next podcast, where Apple Podcasts, Spotify, your favorite podcast provider, whatever you want. Right, yeah. You can also watch us on YouTube. Oh, good. Or on Facebook. Subscribe, like, comment, hit the notifications. Isn't there a bell or something? There is. Okay, do that. It'll be great. Fantastic. Thanks for joining us, everybody. See ya and hear ya next time.